From Peoria Public Radio, this is Out and About. I'm Nathan Irwin.
And I'm Suzette Boulay of Arts Partners of Central Illinois. We're talking with Susan Felder. She's directing Bradley University Theater's production of The Mountaintop that opened last night. Performances continue through March 1st. We're so glad that you joined us, Susan.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Now, I think this may be a play that's unfamiliar to a lot of people in Peoria. So can you just take a little bit of time and give us the premise of the play?
Absolutely. It was a play that was unfamiliar to me until we were looking for something, and then it was presented to me and I flipped. It takes place the night before Martin Luther King is assassinated. And it takes place in room 306 at the Lorraine Motel. And it's right after he's given his famous, now famous, mountaintop speech, where he kind of prophesies his own death in it. And this is a fictitious account of a maid, sort of the people. She's almost, you know, during that time, we were preaching Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and Malcolm X. We need to be violent. We need to take this into our own hands, another path. She's more of that school. And they spend an evening together, and she rocks his world and gives him a run for his money.
In fact, I was lucky enough to read several of the scenes, and in every which way, shape, and form, she is his equal. She's not a maid.
Yes.
It seems like she's the catalyst for bringing out what his beliefs and his dreams.
In so many ways. In so many ways. She challenges him, makes him examine his life. You know, she's of the people. She really is of the people, and it's interesting to see what happens with him, too. His language changes, you know, much like Obama was accused of, you know, of speaking down to a certain culture, right? And all of a sudden, the Ebonics come in. You know, and he is very King, who is so articulate. He gets very comfortable, very home. So we get to see him in a different light than we see King. And we get to see him warts and all in this production. You know, he's this icon who can live up to Martin Luther King. Well, this play strips that away and it shows his humanity, faults, lots of faults. And she helps bring those out. She calls him on it. You know, she's got faults of her own. Yeah.
I'm interested in the choice dramatically of using a fictitious character as King's counterpart, as opposed to using his wife or one of the historical mm-hmm. figures that was in his circle.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that choice allow you to do dramatically that you couldn't have done using an actual character?
Well, he gets to let his proverbial hair down. I mean, his wife was an opera singer. You know, I mean, she gave that up to sort of be a mother and be a wife. But she's classy, Coretta Scott King, a classy, classy woman. There's something different you can do with someone who speaks with profanity, mm-hmm. someone who is of the people, someone who is in it and very affected by civil rights, that it's a different world than it is dealing with one of the privileged, even among the Black community, one of the privileged, you know, Ralph Abernathy. I mean, you can't really, they were fighting to sit at the same lunch counter, so to say that they're privileged is absurd. But King had a decent amount of money. He really did. The man was a dresser, and she is not that. There's some question about, I will give you a line from the play. She brings up his coffee, and he says, well, that was fast. And she says, well, I've been called Quickie Camé before. You know, so
you can't do that with Coretta Scott King.
No, you cannot. And it allows him, and he liked the ladies. Martin Luther King liked the ladies. And it was his downfall on several occasions. You know, the FBI kept a massive file on him. Hoover wanted to bring him down in a major way. And here he is presented with this beautiful, sassy woman, and the two of them negotiating each other is just, it lets him strip a mask off of, you know, there are times in the play when he answers the phone, he says, Martin Luther King Jr., oh, it's you, Corey, hi. You know, but the thing that you have to be and that you're expected to be when you're a leader like that, you have to be that. You know, you've got to hold your breath and stand high because anybody is waiting to knock you down. And with somebody like her, he gets to sit down, take his shoes off, and be.
I can tell by the sound of your voice that there's lots of passion in you about this production.
Yes.
And yet, even in the PR materials, it said, this is a passionate performance. Talk about the two actors and how they're bringing passion to this.
This has been fascinating because, you know, I'm a white girl from Michigan. And civil rights for me has had, it's been a different experience. Certainly. And these two, first of all, they're just really talented actors, and they've grown in major ways, in major ways. I can't wait to get them work up in Chicago. I mean, they're so, these two are terrific. But it was very interesting. It's very interesting with these two. They do bring their passion, but getting in touch with the passion that lived in the 60s for them, because with Ferguson, with Eric Garner, with all of this stuff, we do see, are we going backwards, right? These two lived in they were brought up in a different era than in the 60s, where there was some righteous anger. And there's righteous anger today, but we're, even as African Americans, they are a little removed from that until we got into the discussions. And they have gotten in touch with some roots that they didn't even know about. We talked a lot about the Black community and their experiences. And, you know, they're both affluent students in a new way. Aries talks about, Aries Allen Roberson is playing Martin Luther King. And he said the other day, he said, "We're so ready for a new wave. It's happening, Susan." And I said, "How do you know this?" Because I can't breathe over the whole Ferguson thing. He said, "No." He said, "We're in a different place than we are in the 60s because everybody is feeling it. It's not just, I mean, certainly there is some of that. It's their problem." But he said, we're in a place where we're all passionate about it. The mask has been stripped off and we're much more, not everybody, but as a country, we're a little more secure with ourselves, with sharing power, with whatever the roots of all of that are. So he's got great hope, and this play offers great hope, and they're very passionate about doing it. They're just on a mission, these two.
I'm curious about how you work with an actor to portray someone like King, who, in addition to being iconic,
yes,
is so well documented. There mm-hmm. are so many video and audio clips. So how do you work with an actor to come up with a portrayal that's not just an imitation of the film clips that we've all seen, but is like an authentic human person on a stage?
It's such a smart question because it is the essence of acting. Like, do you find the outside of it, or do you find who this person is inside? And I said to him, you know, I said, "Aries, first of all, you're not 39. You know, I had to tell him the other day, "You can't run across the bed. The man is way too in shape." I said, "You cannot run across the bed like that. You're 39 and you are exhausted, you know." And so when we talked about that, you know, when we started out, he's studying the lilt of King's voice and the way that he has, the way he sings a sermon but means it. But what we're looking for with any character, but with this one in particular, what you have to find is the essence of who that person is, of what makes them tick. Why does he do that? And why can somebody else preach like that and we won't buy them? What is it about Martin Luther King Jr., that the conviction, where does it come from? You know, and so we talk about things like, again, we talked about his womanizing, right? But the guilt that he's constantly making up for with God, you know, or is he? Like, is he worthy? Is he, you know, our faults and how that drives us? And so we're getting, like, you have to get to a real human level and go, what makes people tick? And then you go and I go, "Hey, if you take your hand and you lift it up a little there, we can get that image that he did in the Merv Griffin interview." You know, so he's studying him. And at the same time, it's just another acting job.
And talk about the maid. I get the impression she could easily be a scene stealer.
Well, she's funny. She's very funny. She's got a very foul mouth that she apologizes for every 5 minutes. She's got some opinions, that woman. And she's got some tricks up her sleeve, you know. And I don't want to give any spoilers, but she takes us to it in a totally unexpected place in this play. And you think this play is one thing, and all of a sudden you go, "What? Wait, no, it's not. What? It's not this." She's a character. She is a character. She's got very colorful language. She's hysterical. Very funny. She drinks, she smokes, she's, you know, she's just a character. Yeah, she's a scene stealer.
But highly intelligent.
Oh, highly intelligent. And you know, and that's what I kept saying to Kiela. And she says to him at one point, she says, "How are my oratorical skills?" And she looks at King and she says, "You didn't think I knew that word." You know, because he was highly educated. Oh, my God, that man was highly educated. And, you know, and there's a whole group of people who are struggling to get into a school that isn't, I mean, things haven't changed there. I mean, you talk about those inner city schools sometimes, you know, and they're struggling and there's a reason. Well, things haven't changed. They have changed, but not that much. And so she's from that world, and yet she's sharp. She's street smart. She's very street smart.
We've been talking with Susan Felder about Bradley Theater's production of The Mountaintop by Katori Hall. Performances continue through next Sunday at the Hartman Center Theater. Susan, break a leg.
Thank you. Thank you.
And Nathan, tomorrow night at the Gateway Building from 6 to 8 p.m., the Peoria Art Guild presents a group group installation exhibit. Guess you had to be there. It's promoted as an unconventional art exhibit that will radically transform the way you view art, so plan to stop on by.
And the North Branch of the Peoria Public Library presents music by the Sally Weisenberg Band. That is Sunday afternoon from 2 to 4. It's part of their Music in the McKenzie series.
Out and About is a production of Peoria Public Radio and Arts Partners of Central Illinois. Each week, we connect you to the arts community by talking with local arts leaders and performers.
You can learn more about Peoria Public Radio when you visit us on the web at peoriapublicradio.org. I'm Nathan Irwin, and this is Out and About.